Tag position right now, dude.
You in your tag position?
Yeah.
All right, bro. All right, well, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. And today, I've got a guest, Lee McCormack with LeeLikesBikes.com. Lee, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, James. Just busy as always. I get to ride this afternoon, so I'm stoked.
I know, man. The weather here.
Already in my tag position, baby.
Yeah, the weather here has been a lot better than last winter. I actually got out to go ride some trail the other day, which was, like, impossible the last couple winters, so.
Nice.
Stoked on that. Well, anyways, Lee, nice enough to join me today to talk about, like, bike selection, equipment setup, things like that. These are things that, you know, most riders have a pretty good interest in. But as far as, like, getting some real good, solid advice, you know, you're one of the better sources out there. So on your site, you know, LeeLikesBikes.com, I see you're always getting asked questions on bike selection and equipment and stuff like that, and you do a great job answering it. So I wanted to have you on today to kind of give us some of your insight and advice. So anyway, to start things off, I mean, kind of what's your take on, you know, the goal of your equipment? I mean, just kind of like an overview. I mean, what do you think of, and, you know, when considering this stuff?
That's a great question, man. You know, like, I think we're all used to looking at mountain bike action and all that, you know, and just seeing the newest, sickest, longest travel, lightest stuff, you know? And I think that's how most of us, or we look at what Sam Hill's riding. He's riding a Demo 8 now, sick, so I'll ride those, you know? But I think just like skills and training, you know, I feel like the relationship between you and your bike should be pretty dynamic. And when you pick your bike, it really should fit you. And what I mean by that is it should fit your body. It should fit the kind of riding you do. It should fit your approach, basically. And, you know, if it's effective, if you've chosen the right bike and set it up correctly, it becomes a non-issue. It's like wearing a pair of shoes. You're ripping down the trail or the track. The bike's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and all you're worried about is your next obstacle. That's kind of my thing.
Nice, dude. Yeah, I totally agree. We were talking about that one day, and I just mentioned the analogy of, like, you know, somebody's running shoes. You know, like, nobody thinks that their running shoes are carrying them down the trail, you know, and you know, riders would probably do better if they kind of thought more along those lines. Like, you know, I'm going down the trail, and, you know, this bike is just kind of the vehicle for it instead of the...
That's totally true. Like, it's very analogous to running shoes or skateboard or something that,
yeah,
like, our feet don't go as fast as a bike, you know, and they don't do as well, like, over jumps and stuff as our feet, you know, I mean, as a bike does. So it's like, think of it as this, like, you are sending your body down the trail. Your body's going down the trail, you know, really your belly button. And, yeah, like you say, the bike is the interface between you and the trail. And I guess to take that metaphor one step farther, then you can say, all right, well, then if I'm going to pick my pair of shoes, say, you know, then what do I look for in those shoes, right?
Yep.
And if your thing is, dude, I need to get up the hill as fast as possible, I don't care what about anything else, well, then you're going to pick the lightest, fastest walking pair of shoes you can get, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if you say, dude, I got to clomp through this heavy terrain, I'm worried about, you know, like, basically twisting my ankle, and I got a lot of weight on my back, you know, then you're going to want some really burly, heavy hiking boots, right?
Oh, yeah.
Which is more like a DH bike, I guess.
Yep.
And then I think for most of us, you know, most of us want to be able to climb pretty well and descend like champions we are. So we're going to end up with a pair of, I don't know what you call them, like cross-training shoes, right? Or like hiking shoes?
Something in between, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, man, yeah. So I actually even, in my last newsletter, you know, mentioned that, you know, how specific everything to your riding, you know, is based on what you do. I mean, you know, ripping some, you know, Southern California downhill runs and doing some technical East Coast cross-country riding, you know, require... you know, a different approach in how you look at your riding on a lot of levels, and, you know, equipment and stuff like that, I guess, would definitely be one of those things that you would want to...
Totally true. And, you know, it's funny, like a good rider, like, if you're strong, you know, if you're fit, if you're mobile, like James always says, first mobility, then strength, right? If you're fit and you're skilled and you're confident, then you can pretty much rip on just about any kind of bike. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's funny, like Lopes, Brian Lopes rides for Ibis now, right? And before he had a complete fleet of GT bikes, you know, hardtails, cross country, downhill, all mountain. He had every size bike you can get. Well, now he rides a Mojo, which is like a 5.5-inch travel bike. Homeboy has four of those that he races, he uses for everything, from downhill to slalom racing. And he sets them up a little bit differently, but he's Brian Lopes. He knows how to execute, right? So he can perform in any situation on that one bike. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And that's Brian Lopes, though. You know, James Wilson's like that. Total stuff.
Almost, dude. Keep trying.
But for the rest of us, it really pays us to be kind of careful and considered, let's say, in picking a bike that really fits what we want to do. Like, if you're just like an average Joe sport downhill racer and you're going to go, you know, you want to spend the summer at Whistler, don't try to ride a 5. Don't bring your stump jumper, too. Slow down and get a demo 8, because that's what you need. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And likewise, if you want to ride trail and you're not super fit and you're not super agile on the bike, you know, everybody out there is running a 6-inch bike nowadays. But I'm here to tell you, for 99% of everybody, you know, again, a 4 or 5-inch travel bike that weighs less than 30 pounds is the tool of choice.
Yeah.
So I guess that kind of goes into what I want to talk about, picking your bike, you know?
Yeah, kind of getting into that. I mean, you got, I guess if you're a racer, it's pretty easy. But if you're, you know, more like a average rider who likes to do a variety of things, then it can be a little more difficult. You got to think about a little bit more, like what you're looking for, yeah?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, if you're a cross-country racer, then you're going to rock a hardtail or a short travel bike, right? If you're a DH racer, you're riding a DH bike. If you're a BMXer, you're only going to ride a 20 anywhere.
Buddy.
You know, these guys are really serious about that. And you know what's funny is, I've been riding a 20 a lot because I'm doing that BMX book. And if you ride a mountain bike all the time and you get on a BMX bike, you suck. You absolutely cannot ride the damn thing. But if you ride BMX a lot, you can always get on a bigger bike and rip. It's a one-way ticket. You know?
I know, it's funny. Yeah, I've seen it quite often, actually.
Yeah, it's funny, huh? And it's analogous to, like, the difference between racing, riding your hardtail dirt jump bike and your long-travel DH bike. It's analogous. But, man, the 20-inch wheel makes everything much more exaggerated. So, you know, if you're a racer, like you said, dude, you got to pick the tool that you race on. No question about it. But the rest of us do a lot of different stuff. I'm like, I must have 12 bikes in the garage, and they're all pretty nice ones, you know. But fact is, you know, like, you need a bike that kind of fits you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And anything you ride is a compromise, you know. And these days, it basically comes down to, like, shorter travel bikes are lighter, they're more efficient, they have steeper geometry. So they feel better on, like, mellow terrain, let's say.
Yeah.
The bigger bikes tend to be heavier, a little bit less efficient, and they have slack geometry that works super well when it's steep and gnarly, but it's kind of a handful on flat ground.
Yeah.
So then you gotta make your compromise. And I gotta say, like, for years I've been running enduros. You know, they're really slack, 6-inch travel. You know what I mean? And part of that was, and remember, this is all a combination of your skills, your fitness, and your confidence. And, like, you kind of, like, put those in the blender and the terrain. And what comes out is the ideal bike for you. So I've been riding all these trails out here near Boulder on a 6-inch bike, right, with DH tires.
Yep.
And, over the past few years, you know, that's given me the confidence to just pin it. You know what I'm saying? And I don't care how fast I climb. I'm just pinning it on the big bike. But nowadays, dude, I'm riding a stump jumper with, like, lighter tires, a 90-millimeter stem, stock everything except for I run DH rims because they're stiffer for cornering. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, say 3 years ago when I was racing downhill a lot, you know, and I was really in that mindset and I needed a bigger bike to feel confident, I was riding a bigger bike. But now that I'm kind of a little bit more mellow and I have a lot more confidence in my skills, I'm riding the same trails and I'm riding them faster, taking even gnarlier lines on a smaller bike. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, that's something me and my riding buddies talk a lot about, because over the last year we've actually seen us kind of downsizing our bikes while we're still progressing our riding and just, you know, yeah, you definitely, you know, need a little more bike than you probably need when you're first starting out to kind of keep you from getting too far in over your head when you start doing stupid stuff. But
right.
Realistically, you know, at some point you learn to ride your bike rather than just hang on to it, and you find yourself not needing as much bike to actually ride, and you know, better. And you know, I actually find the lighter, shorter travel bikes, comparatively speaking, to be, you know, more fun and nimble and you know, better in a lot of areas. That, you know, I think a lot of riders that go for the heavier bike, you know, just kind of because of a lack of skills and strength and things that, you know, they should look at on the other end.
Totally, and plus because of fashion, you know?
Yeah, it kind of holds them back. I mean, it's like, you know, the getting a Nomad versus getting, you know, like a Blur LT, you know? I mean, it's, you know, most riders, I think, would do just absolutely fine on like a, you know, the Blur LT, but a lot of people go for that Nomad that'll never use it, never take it to its limits or even close to its limits because, you know, it's the more fashionable bike and you know, they kind of fancy themselves as needing that bigger travel and it's actually kind of holding them back a little bit. But that's just kind of, and I use the Santa Cruz because that's kind of
I agree. And, but, you know, it is all about confidence. That's the X factor, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Worried about going over the bars or getting a flat tire, God knows what, then you need whatever it is you need, you know?
So what like, I got a question for you, though, here, and it's just kind of like, I think ties in, like, you know, what, I think a lot of that may actually stem, too, from just kind of like poor bike setup, you know, and I think, you know, we both see this a lot, you know, on the trail, like, you know, they just, people don't have their bike set up right, you know, their cockpit isn't right, you know, their handlebar is either too long or too short, or, you know, they don't have their suspension set up right, and you know, if you're, you know, trying to test yourself with a bike that's just not set up right, then, you know, you may also find yourself feeling like you need more bike than you necessarily need. So, I mean, I guess kind of what's your take, like, what's your advice on just trying to make sure you've got your bike set up as, you know, efficiently as possible.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah. Okay, that's a really good point, man. Let's talk about your cockpit, you know, which is basically the area that you have to move in. And it's essentially the relationship between your pedals and your handlebars, basically. Because the seat isn't that important, especially if you're actually really riding your bike for real. And basically, you know, and this ties to skills and mobility, of course. But you want to be able to move. You want to be able to achieve a nice neutral position right in the middle and be able to quickly access and smoothly access all the way up, all the way down, all the way forward, all the way back, and to either side and rotating. You know what I mean? So you want it to be neutral. And most bikes that you get, it's funny, like if you go and buy like a stock cross-country bike, you know, these, like, back in the day when we started, James, they all had 150 zero rise stems, right?
Yeah.
With, like, you know, I remember my handlebars were 18 inches wide. I cut them to be the same width as my road bars. Isn't that funny? But anyway, but nowadays they're getting better. But you're still looking at, like, a 90 mil, 100 mil stem.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, like, and that's kind of partly because of just the fashions of what people think bikes should look like, you know? And so I can tell you right now, because I'm doing it, that if your position is correct, if you know what you're doing, you can rip on a 90 mil stem. You can; it doesn't hold you back at all, and it gives you a more comfortable position for pedaling. Okay, but if you're a guy, here's the thing: go to the curb in front of your house. Okay, I want you to drop off this curb 100 times. Okay, and the goal is your front wheel has to stay up until your back wheel lands. You know what I'm saying, James?
Yeah, doing almost like a little drop off of it.
Yeah, and so, like, by the way, if you can do that, you can do a loading dock. It's the same thing. And basically, like, if you find that you are having trouble keeping your front end up and shifting your weight back, then chances are, there's a lot of skill involved here, chances are your stem is too long. And most people will find it easier to kind of be aggressive and rip if they rock the shorter stem and the rise bars. Straight up, you know.
The rise bars, yeah. So, cool, man. So, so that's
also, let me mention the seat, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the seat is kind of the arch enemy of a real bike rider.
Tell me about it.
Don't you think?
Oh, yeah, dude.
And it's so funny, and
it's a necessary evil.
I'll say again?
It's a necessary evil.
Yeah, it kind of is, man, you know? And, like, so the way, I mean, a seat's good for a couple things. It's a good place to rest, you know? And it's a good, well, actually, three things, right? It is a good platform. Like, if you're going to do some extended pedaling, it's a great platform to kind of, you know, situate your hips in the right place, let you make some power. The other thing it is it's a place to rest if you're tired. And the third thing is it is a point of control on your bike, which is pretty important. Like back in the day, they made a BMX bike with no saddle at all. I was talking to Lopes about that. He said it was unrideable. You got to have the seat in there somewhere. But basically, if your seat's high enough to pedal, it's going to be in the way for everything else. And I'm a huge proponent. You know, people who come out across country and road don't believe this. I'm a huge proponent of lowering your seat, dude. And there's no coincidence that, like, the remote seat post is becoming such a popular item. You know, like Crank Brothers, Maverick,
yeah.
Gravity Dropper. Dude, it's come stock on the new Enduro SL. You know, Specialized makes one, too. So let me just tell that to somebody. If you're having trouble, if you're struggling with your technical riding, number one, try bringing your bars closer and higher. Number two, get your seat out of the way.
Yeah, lower the seat, man. That's an important one. Cool, man. Anything else on the cockpit setup or on that or?
I guess that's pretty much it, you know. And I'll say this, like, and actually I'm working on some stuff that'll show this. But when you're in that attack position, which means, okay, everybody write this down. Here it comes, okay. Your weight is balanced on your feet. There's no weight whatsoever on your hands, okay. Your hips are pushed back. This is like a James Wilson. Look at any James Wilson's tapes, and you'll see this action, right? Just push your hips back, keep your torso level, okay? And then your head up and your elbows are out. So if your hips are back, your torso's level, and there's no weight on your hands, then that's a good neutral position, okay? So look at yourself, okay? We'll have someone look at you. If you're in this position and your elbows are out, what I've found, and I've taught like hundreds of people this skill, okay? If your bike is the right length for you, your forearms will basically end up being parallel to your fork. So check that out, okay? And if your stem is too long, you'll see that your forearms are angled out, you know, forward farther.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean, James?
Yeah.
And if your bike is too short, your forearms will be kind of going straight down. But what I've found is that if your forearms are roughly parallel to your bars in that position, you're good to go. And by the way, you know, I'm doing this BMX book, right? So I got a chance to shoot a bunch of different pro BMX racers on their bikes. And these guys range from like 5'6" to probably about 6'4". And it's uncanny. They all fit their bike exactly the same way.
Huh.
Exactly. And, you know, in BMX, they don't have small, medium, large. They go by the quarter inch on the top tubes. Like, it's so dialed in. Like, once you go pro, you're a guy who runs a 21 and a quarter inch top tube, and that's it for the rest of your life. You know what I mean?
Nice.
But actually, it's on my site right now, the graphic of this. And you'll see Chris Powell, Jason Richardson, and Greg Romero all fit their bike exactly the same. So try that, you guys. Get in your attack position, look in the mirror, have someone check out your angle of your forearms. And if they're parallel to your bars, that means that the relationship between your handlebars and your feet is pretty good. Does that make sense, James?
Yeah. Just trying to get yourself lined up. I mean, you know, if your fork's lined up that way and taking hits, just kind of, you know, makes sense. You're trying to get your body lined up. I mean, that's part of what I try to teach in you know, strength training is, you know, you're strongest when you've got your body lined up so that your, you know, your bones are taking the force, you're not, you know, not your joints and stuff like that. And so sounds like it just kind of ties into just proper
totally does
proper
dude.
Movement
right.
Setup.
This Well, like biomechanics are biomechanics, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Whether you're in James's gym crying because he's kicking your ass, or because you're on your bike, you know.
Yeah.
All the same. That's the thing. So it's like you want to be on your bike in a neutral way, and if a force comes through the front end of your bike, it's going to go right into the strut of your arms and shoulders, and you're ready to rock, man.
Yep.
So very good point, James. Very good point.
Hey, I got a question for you, actually, on your on the seat. I had a guy email me, and he was, you know, curious, like, you know, a lot of riders that do my program email me back, and they're just shocked, like, how much they're using their hips, you know, and they didn't even realize that they weren't using their hips at all.
Yeah.
When they pedaled. And so, you know, you had a question like, you know, do you have any advice on setup to try to take advantage of your hips a little bit more? And, you know, I just told him, you know, I just know from movement, you know, the further back you get your hips, the more hip extension, you know, potential you have. So, you know, maybe experiment with moving your seat back a little bit in the rails and see if that, you know, sets you up for a little bit better. So I don't know, man, you got any thoughts on that? Like,
I would have said the same thing, man. You know, like, you might try a slacker seat angle, or, you know, throw your seat farther back on the rails. Like, from what I can tell, if you're pedaling with your seat farther back, but a little bit lower, because remember, as your seat goes back, it effectively raises, you know, increases the distance between your seat and the pedals, right? So if you rock your seat back a bit farther, and a little bit lower, actually does a lot of stuff for a real mountain biker. And one thing, James, is like you mentioned, it recruits, it's more glute and hamstring, less quad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is good. You know, as a matter of fact, like my knees, if I ride a road bike too much, my knees hurt. So like I'm just stronger and better off riding from the back. So that'll totally help recruit those muscles. And the other thing is, it's getting your seat farther out of the way. So what that tells me is if you basically, like, are taking your – and you can run a shorter stem a little bit more effectively. So imagine taking your whole body and moving it, like, an inch back on your bike. Does that – you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you're pedaling from a little bit farther back, right? And your stem's a little shorter. So then with that, that's badass because it gives you more room to corner and do everything else you want to do on your bike.
Yeah.
I think that's totally good advice. And, you know, can I throw something else out regarding seats and hips?
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time with this guy named Greg Romero, who's a coach for Jill Kindner and Mike Adey. They both won medals at the Olympics, you know, and he seems to know something about sprinting.
Yeah.
You know? And one of his biggest things that he told me was to drive your hips forward, right? So, you know, James, you talk about, like, when you're doing your single-legged deadlifts.
Yep.
That motion, that's his motion, too. And what I found is even when I'm in the saddle, and this is subtle. You could probably explain this better than me, dude. But what I found is even if I'm in the saddle, if I subtly try to push my hips forward and kind of maintain a little bit of a tension there and an engagement, what that does is I can feel it totally recruiting my glutes more. And, of course, I'm stronger. My torso is more elevated more easily. And it just seems to work better. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally think so. I mean, it's funny, man. I'm already questioning enough tradition in this industry. I don't know if I'm ready to take on bike setup and bike fit yet, but
right.
I definitely.
Well, we'll do that next because I have some ideas. You know, this is for everybody out there. You know, the way we fit our bikes, like if you go get a bike fit, is totally based on road riding.
Yeah.
I mean, it's completely based on that. And so, like, I'm working on, and I'm going to take a good stab at it with this BMX book, of kind of a universal way to fit people for a more athletic style of riding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like, totally, man.
Because I believe that no matter where your seat is, you can learn to pedal the damn thing. You
yeah.
know, it's high enough and stuff. But the important thing, especially for a mountain biker, is to be able to really rip. So I think that a bike should be fit based on the relationship between the bottom bracket and the handlebars.
Yeah.
That's number one important. Then you stick the seat wherever it needs to be, and I'm working on that, and that'll be out soon, hopefully.
Nice, dude. We'll get into that next time. Well,
yeah,
cheers, man. I got a couple more questions for you here. I definitely want to ask you on bike setup, and the first one's on suspension. You know, I see this is pretty important. So, I mean, just what's your take on suspension and what you should be looking for?
Yeah, that's a complicated one, dude. There's so many variables, right? Basically, like, there are 1,000 ways to set your bike up wrong. And there's, like, basically one or two ways to set it up right. Like I'd see a lot of bikes, man. You know, before we start a clinic, I always get the guy on their bike or the woman and see how it fits them. And, you know, and 99% of the bikes, the suspension is wrong. It's too soft. It's too hard. Too much rebound. Not enough rebound, et cetera, et cetera. And I got to tell you guys, like, especially since you're throwing down on, you're throwing down significant money these days on these bikes, you got to get the suspension set up. I mean, if it's not set up correctly, you're better off on a hardtail, man, straight up. You know, no suspension is better than wrong suspension, I guess I'd say that. So, number one, you got to make sure it's dialed in. You know what I'm saying, James?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you guys, I was just watching a video of James on his blog breaking in his new bike, his new Brody, and he's hitting a bunch of jumps, and you can see that bike is dialed in for him, at least in the rear suspension, because you can see how he loads into the jump and how the thing releases, pop. And I get the feeling that bike is made for that sort of thing, because it's got, like, a nice, firm mid-stroke. Don't you think so, James?
Yeah, dude, it's kind of crazy how good that bike jumps. And, yeah, definitely feel like I've got that rear set up right. You definitely know when you don't.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. It's like we're getting to the point with suspension where it's not, like, you know, so traditionally, right, you guys already know this. I'll go fast. You set the sag, which is based on your weight, you know, and usually bikes sag around 30% or so, right? Then you basically set the rebound. And then most people want the rebound as fast as it can be without it feeling springy.
Yep.
You know? Then you have, like, all this high and low speed compression stuff, pedal platforms that different companies do differently. But essentially what you're looking for is whenever you go out and ride, on a typical ride, if you're pinning it, you want to use all your travel. You don't want to be clanking metal on metal, but you want to use it all. You know, you want to be using all the traction and control that you have available to you, right? So then the high-low platform stuff gets really complicated. But essentially, you want the bike to feel firm when you're pedaling. You want it to feel pretty firm, like if you're pumping into a turn or something. But then you want it to open up and be plush over jumps. And you want it to be able to accept the occasional really big impact, like a big drop, or if you don't see a square-edged hit, you want it to be able to gather that up and take you right to the bottom out. Just kiss the bottom out and then release. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that's the basics of it, right? But, like, bikes today...
easier said than done.
I'm sorry.
I was just saying it's easier said than done to get it all, like...
It's, yeah.
Dialed out perfect.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. Like, if you can, dude, send your stuff to Push.
Yeah.
Or like, Dirt Lab is a guy here in Boulder who does this stuff. But, like, get help. Because, or if you're at a race and you see the Fox van, the Fox truck, go to those guys. They'll help you out. But definitely do it. Because, like Darren at Push says, you don't know how good it can be until you try it. We all get used to stuff being wrong, you know?
Yep.
So, okay, so that's the basics. But, like, riding styles have become so divergent, right? And bike designs have become so divergent now that there are a lot of different ways you can set your bike up, right? So, for example, like James's bike, it's kind of like a 7-inch bike, right?
Yeah. I hope it is. It's what they told me.
Yeah, that's right. Dude, they sold you a 5-inch bike. But it's like a 7-inch bike, right? And it's a kind of a, like a free ridey, light DH sort of a bike, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, James... okay, this is kind of cool. Like, you want, like, once you get that basic stuff figured out, sag, et cetera, the higher level thing to do is to really set your suspension up to fit you, to fit James Wilson, okay? And there are a couple things in play there. One of them is, what terrain do you ride most? What do you care about the most, right? If James is like, dude, I ride Keystone all the time, you know, jumbly, random, rocky terrain, you know, or like bootleg, then I would have him set the bike up pretty soft, you know? Like, the bottom-out point would still be the same, but that whole mid-stroke, we would set up his damping so it's pretty quick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it can respond and kind of kind of like find its way to the rocks. And if you're trying to like set an edge in like a long sweeping turn that's all jumbly and weird, you want the bike to kind of settle in and be soft, right?
Yep.
But we all know James is a hucker. He's Canadian. He likes to jump, right? So then, given that, then what we would do is we would have the same bottom out point. But what we would do is we'd set the suspension up so that the low speed compression, like the pro pedal, you call it, is pretty firm, right? And that then the mid stroke is also firm. And you can watch him on his video on his site right now. That when he goes in there, that bike holds up. You know, he goes right into the middle of the travel, maybe 3/4 of the way through, and it's stiff there, and then it releases him up into the air. So I hope that makes some sense. You know, it's really about setting the bike up for the kind of riding you do. Okay?
Yeah.
Does that make sense, James?
Yeah, totally, man. It totally makes sense. I mean, it you know, if you're and that's something that I personally, you know, deal with. There's definitely some rocky stuff around here, but you know, I like to set my suspension up more for the jumps and drops. Like, you know, I'll take a little less efficiency in the chatter to have it on the jumps and drops and stuff like that. But you know, you know, it's just knowing what you want out of your bike and suspension and knowing you know, just kind of knowing it's a compromise in either direction, but just setting it up mainly
totally
for
it.
What you do and what you want out of your bike for the most part.
But you're exactly right. It is a compromise. So it's like the terrain, your riding style, and the last thing, well, and skill, is kind of something else I want to talk about that I've never heard anyone talk about is basically like how aggressive and how strong are you on the bike? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Basically, you want to be able to, the suspension is not there to allow you to be an idiot and run into stuff, not crash.
Oh, come on,
either
man,
not,
what are you talking
right?
about?
I know I'm like pissing people off right now, but you suck, whoever you are. You have no idea, right? Suspension is there to give you more traction. And the way I see this, and if you guys ever take a class with me, you'll totally get it, is, you know, if you look at terrain is like a wave, right? And even really random, rocky, crappy terrain, if you look at it, if you kind of see the matrix, it has a general flow to it. There are highs and lows. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And what you want to do at the high level when you're really ripping your bike is you're riding that wave. And what you do is you oscillate your body weight to essentially use the waves of the terrain the way you want. So you'll get light on the high, on the ups, heavy on the downs, pumping. I hope that makes sense.
What do you mean, dude? You're not supposed to just sit in your seat and just crank your pedals as hard as you can and just bash into every rock on the way down?
Well, that sounds actually like a good idea.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, dude? I became an expert class racer, and I was the top-ranked racer in my age group in the country, and I was doing just that.
I didn't know
any better, dude. It'll get you pretty far. If I could be 25 again, dude, I would throw down, you know?
Yeah, just rough, rough on your bike.
Right. But so
sure.
You want to oscillate, and that's what suspension's for. Imagine this. If you're on like a hardtail, your bouncing is pretty quick. It's like being on a really, really stiff little diving board. Boing, 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 right? And you can definitely rip it, right, for sure. But your oscillations have to be quick, you know what I mean? And you can only be heavy for a moment, light for a moment. But as you get into longer travel, it's like having a big, soft diving board where you just want to do a big belly flop, and you just dig into that thing and bend it down and release it and fly it to the air, right? So like on a DH bike especially, that oscillation, rather than being like pap, 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 it's more like brup, brup, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you watch, like, video of good DHers, they all have that oscillation going on. And what they're doing, essentially, and not one of them will explain it to you this way, but what they're doing is they are oscillating their weight, and they're probably, the good ones are doing this subconsciously, they're matching their oscillation, their sine wave, with the terrain, okay? Which is, like, a whole awesome thing to talk about, again, you know, for skill stuff. But coming back to bike setup, right? Talking about that oscillation, right? Basically, what you want to do is you want your bike to be soft enough that you can get into it. You know what I mean? That when you're oscillating, like when you want to get heavy into a turn, you want to be able to squash that suspension and really dig it into the ground and really connect. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But you need it to be hard enough that you're not bottoming it out just by cornering. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, like, that's where, that's the next level of bike setup, in my opinion. And you know what's funny? Like, if you go to a national DH race, right, you'll see a lot of the dudes, they'll mess with their suspension, and they'll kind of be cruising along, and all of a sudden they'll just go, and they'll jump on it and try to bottom it out. Have you ever seen guys try to do that?
Yeah.
So what they're doing, and again, I'm not going to explain it this way, is they're basically testing their suspension, because that bottom out point should basically match to how strong you are. Like, how much force can you, James Wilson, drive into the bike? How much force can your body handle? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, dude.
And that is your bottom out. Because if you're, like, smaller or more timid or weaker, and you can't get there, then you're wasting your suspension and you're only using half your travel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's good advice.
And so, like, but if you're stronger than normal, like I know James is, right, then if you were to set your normal sag at 30% and normal damping, I promise you, dude, you could balance and bottom your bike in the parking lot. Clank!
Yeah, you know, it's funny, man. Like, I never really thought about it too much, but I do that. That's been a standard test of mine on my bike for a while. If I can go out in the parking lot and just crank down hard on it and it freaking bottoms out on me, I know it's not set up stiff enough.
That's totally it. You know, you've been doing that intuitively, but that's what you're trying to do. And so that's where suspension setup gets to be really interesting, I think, is, again, what kind of terrain do you like, what's your riding style, but also how much force do you put into your bicycle? And here's an example. You know, I ride an 08 stump jumper, you know, specialized with the specialized fork and shocks and all that stuff. Amazing bike, right? And their suggestion for my body weight is 160 pounds in the rear shock, right? Well, I'm going out there, and I'm bottoming it in the corners, just laying into berms. So I'm up around 220 pounds. So, again, they're suggesting 160. I'm running at around 220 with heavy damping. And that's because I do the James Wilson Dumbo combo program. Thank you very much. You know, but basically, like, the way I ride, not that I'm some stud, but I put a fair amount of force into the bike, and I really work that oscillation. So when I lay into a turn, I lay into it, and I'll be using all my travel. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's kind of, the next step would be for people to really kind of assess the way they ride and basically how strong they are. And, like, I was talking to a guy named Mike Luby. He runs a suspension tuning shop here in Boulder. It's called Dirt Labs, dirtlabs.com, about this. And, like, I want to try to help him develop standards. And, like, one of the things, and maybe, James, you could help with this, is basically, like, how high can you jump on your feet?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because that's a measure of your power, right?
Yeah, generally, yeah.
Maybe we can get into this later on, but, like, that's the other piece of it. It's, like, how strong are you? And, by the way, like, if you get on, like, a pro's downhill bike, like, Lopes is a good example, right? It's so stiff, dude. It's stiffer than most people's cross-country bikes. And I remember riding that thing going, dude, this guy, he doesn't know anything. He's not even using his travel. But as powerful as that guy is, damn right he's using all of it. He just rides with more power than the rest of us.
Yeah.
I guess, to sum that up, I would say, you know, really kind of, whoever you guys are out there, you know, really think about what, you know, when you're talking about your bike, think about what kind of riding you do, which bike or bikes will really serve you. And then I want you guys to not just run a 50 mil stem because Nathan Rennie runs one or whatever, but I want you guys to kind of pay attention to your position on the bike and try to match your body, and then eventually, especially with suspension, really get into how you ride the bike, how strong you are, and try to make, and this will help you make that your bike that invisible pair of shoes that we were talking about in the beginning.
Nice, dude. Awesome. So, just to recap for everybody, on the bike setup, you know, with the cockpit, you recommend maybe thinking about a shorter stem and higher handlebars than what usually comes stock on the bike, and maybe think about setting your seat a little bit further back in the rails. Is that kind of the summary on the cockpit there?
Yeah, I'd say so. And the other thing would be get in your attack position and see if your forearms are parallel to the fork.
Yep. Okay. And then on suspension, just kind of follow the company's directions to kind of get it set up in a general area. But then, like we were talking about doing some experimenting, seeing how much power you can apply into the bike, looking at your riding style and kind of making adjustments from there on the suspension.
And let me just, that's totally it. And to dive in on that just a hair, when it comes to your suspension, start with the stock one and jump up and down as hard as you can on that friggin' bike. Just crush it. And if you find that you can't get anywhere near bottom out, then soften it. If you find that you're hitting the bottom, then you should stop. Then you should stiffen it up. And
yeah.
I mean, if I feel best when I can barely make it to the bottom out, barely, on flat ground, just in the parking lot. So
yep.
That's a thought.
Right on. Well, right on, Lee. Well, shoots, man. That's some great info. I think gave people a lot to think about, and some insight into setting their bike up, a little more efficiently, a little more for their riding style. So. Appreciate you taking the time to come and share some knowledge with us.
My pleasure, brother. It's always good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, man. Cool. Well, we'll be doing this again soon, so we'll be doing another interview podcast on something fun and exciting, letting Lee bring his unique insight to it here. And so for anybody that wants some more good info, LeeLikesBikes.com. He's got a lot of great skills training and bike setup and other just kind of random info there. And then I got my blog at bikejames.com, some good training information and stuff there. So, well, right on, Lee. Any last words for us?
Oh man, that's about it. I hope you guys are having fun out there, and I'm about to go ride. I'm gonna go become a sine wave down a big rocky trail. It's gonna be sweet.
Excellent. Well, right on, man. Well, I guess I'll talk to you next time. And everybody else, hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast, and look for the next one.
Nice.